Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. Today is unleavened bread, called matzah in Hebrew. And since this is the single most important day of the year, I thought we would dispense with the news and go directly to Yah's testimony. In the book called Kara, which is the third of either five or six books of the Torah, depending on whether or not you consider the book named Yahusha to be part of the Torah. He certainly completed the Torah, wrote Torah. In that book, in the heart of that book, in the heart of what is the Torah, Yahweh presented his 7 days that he would like to meet with us. They are all presented as invitations to be called out of this world and to be welcomed into God's presence. These days, while they facilitate not only our salvation, but our relationship with Yahweh, are actually byproducts of something that is vastly more important to God than is saving us. They are byproducts of the covenant. It is the covenant's purpose to enable us to engage in a relationship with God. There is only one of these. It has not been renewed. Therefore, there is no such thing, according to God, as a New Testament. The one and only covenant provides 5 terms and conditions which we must come to know, understand, and respond affirmatively to if we wish to engage in a relationship with God. If we do so, God has promised 5 benefits. Those benefits are all facilitated by the first 4 Moed Mikre, the first 3 of which are celebrated in succession as a cohesive unit in the first month of the year. The first month is Abib. It is the time that barley kernels are apparent in the plant, and yet they are still green, receptive, malleable, growing. And it is during this particular time, which is the first month of the year, and it would be the renewing light on a moon closest to the time that barley is beginning to sprout, which is essentially the new moon closest to the vernal equinox, that we begin to count 14 days. Now, God provides this background previously in the book called Names, Shemot, which is how we understand the concept of Abib. Now, turning to the Kara presentation, we've read these words before, but I always like to approach anything that is important to God in context. We find, in the first month, Kodesh, which is a time of renewal, on the 14th of the month, for the express purpose of understanding at twilight, is Passover, Pesach, according to and to approach Yahweh. Several things always scream out at me when I read a statement like this. The first of those is that God provided first and foremost a path to approach him. This is in the first month, on the 14th day of the month. 14th day of any month will be a full moon. That means that there's as much light as possible during the day and during the night. And that these Moed Mikre are specifically designed for us to approach Yahweh. They are according to Yahweh, and they are designed for us to come into Yahweh's presence. They aren't designed for us to meet with the Lord. They aren't designed for us to come into the presence of a Jesus Christ. They have nothing to do with an Allah, and they aren't according to Jewish traditions. They have nothing to do with Judaism. So in the first month, on the 14th of the month, for the purpose of understanding at twilight, is Passover, according to and to approach Yahweh. The last thing that I wish to share about this before we go to the next statement is that we approach God through our minds. He provided testimony, which we can examine in his Torah, prophets, and Psalms. He proved that he is God and that he authored this testimony because of the writing quality, the accuracy of the presentation, the consistency of the presentation, and because it is filled with countless prophecies. Prophecies that have all either come true exactly as they were predicted, or we can see being fulfilled on our immediate horizon. And so it is by understanding that we come to know who God is, that we come to embrace the terms and conditions that he outlined for us to engage in a relationship with him, and that we receive the benefits of that relationship. Our understanding takes us to a point where we recognize that Passover is the door to eternal life. It is the doorway that begins a seven-step walk from our world to God's home. God continues, speaking of this day, the single most important day of the year. The 15th day of this same month is the festival feast of unleavened bread. Unto and to approach Yahweh, 7 days you shall eat bread without yeast. As we've said before, there is no explanation of Passover at this time because the explanation of Passover has already been presented. It was presented in the book named Shemot Names, corrupted to Exodus. We will consider that in a moment. So, the 15th day is the festival feast, a celebration of unleavened bread. It is also to approach Yahweh. It's on that same path. It's just the next step in that seven-step path. 7 days you shall eat bread without yeast. Yeast is a metaphor for the fungus of sin, for corruption. And so, bread without yeast, because bread is comprised of grain, and grain is the symbol throughout Yah's testimony of a saved soul. Bread that is not corrupted speaks of a perfect and purified righteous soul that is prepared to enter Yahweh's presence. The first and foremost, the primary day, exists as a set apart and cleansing invitation to meet and to be called out. It is a mikra. You shall not engage in any of the work of the business of the heavenly messenger. Ko abada malaka. There is something here that I shared correctly, I believe, in a previous show, and something that I may have communicated incorrectly. It says that the first day is this day known as unleavened bread, that would be today, is a mikra. Now, that's correct. That means that it is an invitation to meet God, to be called out of this world, to read and recite Yah's testimony. It is a day to do what we are doing right now. Very few things are as important as participating in the mikra, because the mikra are God's invitations to meet with him. Now, what it says next is where I think I said something accurate and something that was inaccurate. You shall not engage in any of the work of the business of the heavenly messenger. Now, here, asa means to engage, to perform, to fashion, to accomplish, to act upon. Kol is any. Work, in the ordinary sense, is avodah. And then it ends with this unique word that we discussed in a previous program, malaka. Malaka is very similar to the Hebrew word malak. The only difference between malaka and malak is that it is made feminine. Now, malak in Hebrew means messenger. The spiritual beings that we have transliterated the Greek word agelos to see as angels are malak. A malak is a spiritual envoy serving Yahweh, doing his work. Yosha was a malach under that definition. The set-apart spirit is a malach under that definition, although a very special malach, in that they are part of Yahweh, set apart from him. And so this doesn't say that the first day is a Shabbat. It doesn't say this day is a Shabbaton, which would be a special Sabbath. It just says that this day is a Mikra, and you should not engage in the work of the heavenly messenger, the Malacca. So if I have rendered Malacca accurately, and it is clearly based upon Malach, then it doesn't say you cannot do your job on this day. It just says that you shouldn't try to contribute to the work that God has done for us. You see, the covenant is a mutually participatory endeavor. We have terms and conditions that we're asked to meet, and we engage with God in this relationship. It is a mutual relationship. Both contribute, both benefit. As it relates to our salvation, particularly these first two steps, we benefit, he participates. All we do is answer the invitation to attend the party. He has done everything to supply the party. And so what he's saying here is, don't do as Paul did. Paul twice writes that he was crucified right alongside of the Messiah, and that his suffering completed the sacrifice necessary to save. This is an admonition not to make that claim. And so that is important for us to understand. Moving on. This is, I think, is the single most important aspect of this instruction. God says, come near and be present with the maternal manifestation of the fire or light, so that you can approach Yahweh for 7 days. Come near, be present with the adoptive mother who enlightens and elevates. This is from Isha, the feminine aspect of God's light, to approach Yahweh for 7 days. It is by being enveloped in the set-apart spirit's light that we look perfect in God's eyes. To Shattering Myths. My pleasure to be able to be with you on this wonderful day. This is Unleavened Bread. It is Matzah. It is the day that Yahweh promised to remove all corruption from us so that we would look perfect in his eyes, so that we would indeed be perfect from God's perspective and therefore be able to enter his presence. The means that we avail ourselves of to accomplish that is that we appear before our adoptive mother. That's the Ruach Kodesh, our spiritual mother, who enlightens and elevates us, but most importantly, who envelops us in the garment of light, which is why we're asked to come and be present before the Isha, which is the feminine aspect, the maternal aspect of God's light, for the express purpose of approaching Yahweh. And we do so for 7 days, because 7 is the promise associated with our salvation. That it is God who is one, plus man who is represented by 6. There are 6 steps to this final destination of Sukkah, of camping out with God in his... That is the promise. The basis of 7 is Sheba, which is from Shaba, which means to make... oath, to make a promise. That is what is being communicated here. God has made a promise that he is going to enlighten us, enrich us, empower us, and perfect us, all of which transpire over the first 4 Moed Mikre. God then goes on to say the 7th day is a set-apart Mikra. It is a kodesh, a cleansing and separating, purifying and dedicated invitation to be called out and to meet for reading and for reciting his words so that we can be welcomed. He then says, you shall not do any of the work of the service of the heavenly messenger. Once again, this is malak, but with the ah ending, which tells us that this is the work here that is performed by the set-apart spirit. And if you recall, it's interesting. The set-apart spirit, I mean, God knows that we can't and shouldn't do the work that he performed in the Kodesh Kodesh, his most set-apart nature, which would be the Masaya Yahusha, where his soul went into the place of separation, Sheol, to pay the price for our sins so that we would not have to endure that separation, that estrangement from God. But what he is saying here is that the spirit left the soul and the body of Yahusha on the upright pole. And it was reunited with his soul upon emergence from Sheol, and it was by being reunited with the soul upon the exit from Sheol that the miracle of becoming a new creation, becoming the firstborn child in the covenant family took place. And that was the work of the set-apart spirit, the Malacha. So Yahweh has given us a way home, and he wants us to come near and approach him using the seven steps that he has provided. This is the message, this is the purpose, this is the product of the Mikra. Now, just to reemphasize, if this is properly rendered, particularly Malacha, and, you know, I've spent a lot of time on this, but I am prone to mistake. And you should never view anything that I say as being inerrant. I am incapable of being inerrant. I am a dull and dented, flawed implement, but one that at least knows where to turn for answers. And therefore, while the answers are always accurate, the message from Yahweh in his Torah is always accurate, doesn't mean that I'm always the perfect conduit in terms of presenting it. But if I've translated this correctly, then God isn't calling this a Shabbaton. He's not even calling this a Shabbat. He's not saying that I don't want you to do any of your ordinary work on the first or final day of unleavened bread. He's simply saying, I don't want you to attempt to engage in the work that I am doing for you. Your job here is to answer the invitation. Your job here is to come in presence, into the presence of the set-apart spirit. Your job here is to acknowledge that you are eating unleavened bread because I am removing the corruption of religion and politics represented by the fungus of yeast from you. And that understand that I've opened the doorway to eternal life on Passover in conjunction with that. And that all of this is leading to Bukhurim, to you becoming a child born into my family. Now, yesterday we stepped back briefly in time to consider the presentation of this series of events in the Shemoth Names Exodus chapter of the Torah. And when we return to Shattering Mists after the break, we will consider once again what Yahweh had to say about Passover and its role in this grand celebration that is known as Unleavened Bread. I am Yahweh. Well, not me, but God is Yahweh. And in his Torah, he said, I am Yahweh. It's interesting, of course, in the Torah that God does speak in first person. That is so remarkably different than the so-called Christian New Testament, where God is very, very, very seldom presented speaking in first person, something that he does throughout the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. He says here, I am Yahweh. The blood will exist for you as a sign on the homes where you, by way of relationship, are at that time. So when I see the blood, I will choose to actually Pesach, pass over you on that account. and the plague leading to death and destruction shall not exist among you when I strike in the realm of the crucible of Egypt. This day will exist on your behalf as a memorial and a reminder, and you shall choose to genuinely and completely celebrate with him a festival feast to approach Yahweh throughout all of your lives and generations, continuously and genuinely celebrating the festival feast with him as an engraved prescription for living forever. Lots of wonderful insights here. One of those is that he spoke of the blood of the Passover lamb and it being placed on the doorway of the portal that is the portal of life. It is the portal that eliminates the plague of death and destruction. Now, death and destruction is where all human souls end up that do not avail themselves of Pesach. If you do not attend the Passover celebration, your soul will die and cease to exist. Simple as that. No torture, no penalty, no pain, no anguish. Passover resolves the issue of death and destruction. God said it as clearly as words allow. Yes, there are three potential destinations for human souls. Well, there are three destinations, and the potentials to where you go depends upon your actions in this life. If you choose to avail yourself of Passover, unleavened bread and first fruits, then as a byproduct of the covenant, should you embrace its five terms and conditions, once your life here on earth is complete, you will enter God's home. You will become his child and live forever with him. That's the best of the options. That's the offer of the covenant and the path of these Moed Mikre. The vast majority of people, though, do not capitalize on Passover. Very, very, very few people celebrate Passover as God just instructed. And therefore, the vast majority of people, upon the end of their mortal lives, die, and their soul ceases to exist. There are many, however, that lead people astray. Most religious leaders, many if not most political leaders, many academicians, many in the media, promote a misnomer, promote lies, promote deceptions that lead people away from God. And there is a degree to which you can do that that causes God to say that you are in league with the adversary, and therefore you are born of the serpent, and therefore you are immortal, but eternally separated from God. Those souls will spend eternity in Sheol. The ringleader of Sheol, besides Hasatan, the adversary, will be a man named by the same name, Shaul, Paul, the founder of the Christian religion. So this is the essence of this, is that the blood of the Passover lamb on the doorway that is the doorway to life resolves the issue of death and destruction. The next aspect of this is that God is saying that, you know, while you are there at this time in Egypt, I want to see the blood smeared on the doorway of your home. It's a sign for you. He didn't say that if you that for us living in America or Australia or New Zealand or Great Britain or in Denmark, that I want you to spread the blood of the Passover lamb on your doorway. Now, if you want to do it as a symbol for what was done there and it helps reinforce this message, fine. But according to these words, you're not being asked to do that. You're being asked to understand the symbolism. You're given the opportunity to understand the symbolism of it. The next aspect of this that is interesting, it speaks of the crucible of Egypt. This is Ba'eretz Mitzrayim, in the realm of the crucible of Egypt. Mitzrayim is the plural of Mitzra. Mitzra means crucible. Why would God name this place a crucible? Because what a crucible represents. A crucible is a place of testing. It's a place of where heat, fire is designed to separate that which is valuable from the dross. And so here the crucibles, and crucible is used for that reason as a symbol of judgment. The crucibles are on the Egyptian side. It is religious and political, military and economic oppression. God explains that elsewhere in his Torah and his prophets so that he leaves no doubt. And second, there is also the crucible of divine judgment, where we are judged to determine whether or not we have led people astray or we have done our best to embrace the terms and conditions of the covenant and attended these invitations. If we have, we are not judged. If we have not, we are judged. So it says that this day, speaking of Passover, exists on our behalf. That's the nature of the sacrifices associated with these days, is that God made the sacrifice, we don't. This sacrifice is on our behalf. The Passover lamb, the diminished corporeal manifestation of Yahweh, sacrificed himself on our behalf. He then says that this day is to be a memorial and a reminder. So what happened on this day should be something that reminds us of what God has done in our lives. And therefore, when Yahusha, on Passover, was nailed to the upright pole on Mount Moriah, we should have collectively, as a people, remembered that this was a commemoration of our inheritance right, a means to recall and understand the relationship of who he was and what he was doing on this day. And yet, in large part, because of the corruption of Pauline doctrine and the corruption of the religion of Christianity, very, very few people make the connection between Yahusha, the Passover lamb, and the sacrifice he made on our benefit, for on our behalf, on this day. We lost sight of the fact that this is a memorial, a reminder. Then God says, and you should choose to genuinely and completely celebrate this with him as a festival feast to approach Yahweh throughout all of your lives and generations, dwelling places and throughout time, continuously and genuinely celebrating the festival feast with him as an engraved prescription for living forever. Wow. Well, that tells us how to observe it, doesn't it? First of all, it tells us that we should observe this as a festival. This notion that was done throughout the Middle Ages, the Dark Ages, and is done in Shia Islam today and in many other religious cultures, where people flog themselves and they say, you know, if I can take on some of the suffering that it will purify me, or in Rabbinic Judaism, where Yom Kippurim, the Day of Reconciliations, is considered a day that you afflict your soul, which is a total corruption of Yah's testimony. But God is saying here, no, 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 no. I want you to recognize that this was for your benefit, and I want you to celebrate this. He says celebrate three times. Celebrate it. That's how we observe Pesach and unleavened bread, as a celebration. With him, who's him? The Passover lamb. The human, corporeal, set-apart manifestation of Yahweh. A festival feast. What? For what purpose? How do we observe this? How do we celebrate it? In recognition that this celebration is designed to enable us to approach Yahweh. And where do we celebrate it? Unlike the blood on the doorway, where and when do we celebrate this? It says, throughout all of your lives and generations. Lador. In every dwelling place and throughout time. And then written in the imperfect, which speaks of something that is ongoing, habitual, part of the very fabric of your life. And in the call, which says that it should be genuine and actual, continuously and genuinely celebrating a festival feast with Him. Always. And then God says two other things here, one of which adds information, the other reinforces it. This is the celebration of Pesach, which begins the process of unleavened bread, is a chukah. It is an engraved prescription for living. You want to live? You don't want to suffer death and destruction of your soul? You want the alternative? This is the alternative, chukah. It's an engraved prescription for living. A clearly communicated and inscribed recommendation of what you should do in life to be cut into the covenant relationship. It is the alternative to death and destruction. It is life in the covenant family. The reinforcing concept is olam, forever. Telling us that Pesach is just the beginning of this process of unleavened bread, of unyeasted bread. God, after the Shemoth, Exodus 12 through 14 statements, says, and there's no break, you know, in the original Hebrew, there are no verses. The only reason I even reference them is for those who would like to read along, who would like to verify these translations for themselves, which I strongly encourage. And they are helpful for that point of view, but they are unhelpful from the perspective of if you think that you are citing something in context and you're understanding it when you take one of these numbered statements out of the discussion, you're doing yourself more harm than good. This discussion continues with 7 days you shall eat bread without yeast. Indeed, on the first day you shall observe the Sabbath by removing yeast from your homes and your households. Shemoth, Exodus 12:15. One of the fun things about studying Yah's Word and recognizing our relative status compared to Him is that that sometimes we have the opportunity to learn that we are wrong or have been wrong and need to make a correction. And when we make a correction, we learn. It's part of the growth process. The wonderful thing about the Torah and about this particular day, about matzah, is it is designed for flawed individuals. It means that when we make a mistake, we are literally perfected by this very day. If you want to make a mistake, this is probably the day to do it. Yesterday, we were having a conversation with William, one of my favorite callers. William is the elevator man who calls in from Florida from time to time. And he was talking about the choice of meats that he gave to that was fed to his. He wasn't the choice of meats. I think he was whether or not his youngest child would eat unleavened bread. And my comment to him was, you know, the good thing about this is that the entire purpose of matzah is to make us perfect. So it's our attitude, our willingness to try to understand this day and to respond to God's invitation that is the most important. Well, here, I just going to need a little of that medicine myself because I mistranslated this last passage. It does not say that you shall observe a Sabbath. That is what many of the lexicons would tell you. But that's really not what is being communicated here. It begins by saying seven, which is Sheba. Seven is the number that communicates God's promise, which is that when we are brought together, that living together is the ultimate purpose. It's the reason that He created the universe, that He wants us to be able to live and grow together. That when we are added to Him, He grows. When we are added to Him, we grow. So 7 days, yom is days, yomim would be the plural, 7 days. It says, you shall eat a kol, bread without yeast, matzah. That's why this day is called matzah. It is bread without yeast. Then God says, Ach, indeed, verily, on the first Rishon, on the foremost day, today is the first, it is the foremost day of, and foremost is really an important concept here. This is the foremost day, by the way, of the year. Then what he actually writes is a derivative of Shabbat, but it's a derivative of Shabbat written in as a verb. And with Shabbat written as a verb, it's written in second person. It's written in the plural form. And it's written in the imperfect as well as using the hifl stem. Now, the hifl stem causes the object of the verb to participate in the action. Now, we are the subject of actually unleavened bread is the subject. We're the object of the verb. We benefit from this when we do it, is what the hifl stem suggests. But here, the concept of Shabbat is being presented as a verb, not as a noun, not as this is a Sabbath. It's not what he said. He's using the concept behind Sabbath as a verb, as an ongoing verb by the imperfect to explain the purpose of this day. And what he's using, because the concept of Shabbat is that it's the day where you cease doing that which is ordinary, and you set it apart as an extraordinary day, as a special day, as a day which is set apart, Kodesh, unto Yahweh. And so what you're doing here is the verb form of the concept of Shabbat, which suggests that this is a day, and the thing that is being identified here is yeast. So that it is a day that we Shabbat, that we rest and reflect, and we put an end to, we put a stop to yeast. It is the day that we rest and reflect, coming to understand the meaning of removing yeast from our homes and from our households, which is Bayeth, which is the basis of Bayreth, which is the covenant relationship with Yahweh. And so this is a day that we rest and we reflect on the idea that yeast is being removed from the covenant and from our lives.
Alex Jones here with a message that could revolutionize health in this country. Going back about a year and a half ago, I began to learn about the incredible health effects of young